number 8, and that's the director's report. So, director, I will hand her off to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we move around the state for our commission meetings, I think it's important that we hear from the local folks. And so, as we're in each region, I'm going to ask regional directors to come up and participate in the regional in the director's report. Particularly important here in Region 5 because we have a brand new regional director, Cassina Lee. And Cassina is going to give you some history, basically tell you about herself and what she's had going on here in the region. She's even newer than me.
Good morning. So, good morning, Chair Smith, Commissioners, Director. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to introduce myself and talk to you a little bit about Region 5. Just a little about my background. I grew up in the mountains of eastern Arizona. I moved to the Northwest in 1989, raised my three sons on the Oregon side of the river on a small hobby farm in Deer Island. That's just a wide spot in the road about halfway between Portland and Astoria. I got my bachelor's and master's degrees in biology at Portland State, and I worked in the Oregon Legislature for the Coastal Caucus on ocean and coastal natural resource policy issues before moving to the governor's office, where I was able to continue working on some of those same issues, specifically the Oregon Shellfish Initiative and efforts to mitigate the impacts of ocean acidification. Following that, I went to work for the Department of Ecology in Lacey as the Water Quality Program's statewide aquaculture specialist with regulatory oversight of finfish aquaculture in hatcheries and marine net pens. Since starting here at DFW in September, I've just been here just about 2 months to the day, I've been really struck by how generous everyone has been with their time and their knowledge, from the leadership in Olympia to my fellow RDs around the state to the staff in the regions. So on that note, I want to give you a little overview of Region 5. I'm going to just give you some fast facts and overviews of our programs and kind of some hot topics that each program sees coming up. So Region 5 includes 6 Southwest Washington counties, Wakayakum, Cowlitz, Lewis, Clark, Skamania, and Klickitat. Since 2017, our headquarters office has been in Ridgefield, about 14 miles north of Vancouver, and there are 6 field offices located in Kathlamet, Chehalis, Kelso, Morton, Stevenson, and White Salmon. We have 15 hatcheries in the region and 4 wildlife areas totaling just over 36,000 acres and over 70 fishing access sites that are managed here in the region. We have a little less than 200 permanent staff assigned to our facilities and also a large number of temporary staff that come on seasonally to implement several fish and wildlife projects. So a little about our fish program. It includes 4 subdivisions or units covering 2 districts with 3 counties in each. Our subdivisions include our regional management unit, which covers fish management and hatcheries in the Columbia River tributaries, and then our Columbia River management unit that you heard from yesterday, covering main stem Columbia issues, including sturgeon, smelt, northern pike minnow management, and they also support regions 1, 2, and 3. We also have the Fish Ecology and Life Cycle Monitoring Unit, or the ELC, and the Biological Data Systems Unit, the BDS. And the ELC and the BDS are part of the science division that's embedded in the region. And this program has a large focus on monitoring the status of the fisheries resources in Southwest Washington, monitoring fisheries in the Columbia River and the tributaries, and making regulatory recommendations regarding management of those fishery resources. The program also stocks lowland and high mountain lakes for recreational fishing opportunity. The Region 5 Fish Program is highly dependent on federal and local funding for monitoring fisheries, population assessments, and hatchery operations. The primary federal funding sources are BPA and the Mitchell Act Program and the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund. We are very proud of our field and hatchery staff. The folks out collecting our angler creel information, spawning ground surveys, and other fieldwork activities provide the data foundation we need for making management choices that work to maximize fishing opportunities while protecting natural salmon and steelhead populations. Our hatchery staff work hard to produce high-quality fish for a multitude of harvest and conservation purposes. I want to give a particular shout-out to the crew at Kalama Falls Hatchery, who welcomed me out for a day of spawning fall Chinook recently. I was able to climb with a little help. Waders are not graceful. but climb into the water and help wrangle those fish, and the crew very patiently showed me how to extract the eggs and the fluid and mix them together with your hands and get them set up in incubation trays. So the pride our hatchery crews take in the husbandry of these fish is really evident when you spend time with them, and they deserve a lot of appreciation. So we're also proud of the advancements we're making in the use of technology to improve the efficiency and accuracy of the data we collect and analyze. For example, we're continuing to increase the use of electronic data capture, such as tablets and data loggers, and improving our database structure, which minimizes data entry errors, it speeds up data transfer, and generally improves our ability to analyze the data that we rely on for sound decision making. Our Columbia River Management Unit includes both DFW and PSMFC staff, providing sample information, stock composition, and management of those fisheries. CRMU staff are primarily located out of the Ridgefield office and work in waters from the mouth to the Idaho-Oregon border on primarily salmon, steelhead, and sturgeon. Occasionally, staff are located in Tri-Cities for sturgeon sampling as well. This is a relatively new team. They've been around for a year now. They work daily with ODFW and with our East Side regions and our tribal partners. The 10-year USV-Oregon management agreement was approved this past year, and the Salmon Basin Policy Review report will hopefully be published mid-November. We want to thank Cindy LaFleur and Martise Dobler for their efforts on that project. So some fish hot topics. As you know, hatchery programs in the Lower Columbia are required to attain federal permits to ensure that they're operated in a manner consistent with our conservation of ESA-listed salmon and steelhead. So after 2016 consultation with NOAA on Mitchell Act-funded hatchery programs in January of 2017, a final biological opinion and the terms and conditions was issued by NOAA, providing federal coverage under the ESA for these hatchery programs. And so our Region 5 staff are currently working to implement the terms and conditions of the biop. Additionally, NOAA Fisheries has notified us that consultation on FERC-related hatchery programs in the Cowlitz and Lewis River basins are scheduled for the spring of 2019, so staff are preparing for that consultation. Our Region 5 staff are also working on updates to the hatchery and genetic management plans for these hatchery facilities and working on options to address recommendations from the Commission related to southern killer whale prey enhancement. In our Columbia River Management Unit, the Columbia River Policy Review is ongoing, as you're aware. In addition, the development of an Upper Columbia River Management Plan will occur during 2019 and will involve mostly Upper Basin folks. Predation issues are ongoing and very challenging, as you heard yesterday. Salmon, steelhead, smelt, and sturgeon stocks continue to decline, and staff are working on a forecasting workshop. There's also a potential new spill regime for BPA, which could lead to an increase in revenue or at least stable income for them. I did want to mention that I was able to spend an afternoon at the Pound Net recently. It was really instructive to see it in use. They did a couple of lifts while I was there. So I recommend if you haven't been able to see it for yourself, it's really interesting to see it operating. I'll move on to the wildlife program, which includes district biologists covering wildlife management and research activities across the two districts in our region, wildlife area staff that operate and maintain our regional wildlife areas, access maintenance staff that maintain clean and safe fish access sites, and human-wildlife conflict staff that address damage by wildlife, as well as private land staff focused on habitat enhancement and public hunting access on private lands. The Region 5 Wildlife Program manages a diverse array of species in the region, including the St. Helens elk herd, which is one of the largest herds in the state, and the Willapa elk herd with Region 6, a unique goose hunting program that educates hunters on species identification and limits take of dusky Canada geese, and recovery work on several listed species, such as endangered western pond turtles and Columbia white-tailed deer. We manage several lands acquisition quests for fish and wildlife conservation and public access, the federally permitted control program for California sea lions, that prey on ESA-listed salmon that you received an update on yesterday, We also monitor the status of listed as well as big game populations in the region and formulate regulatory recommendations for public hunting based on status of the various big game populations by game management unit. So the wildlife hot topics, elk hoof disease, we've received sporadic reports of limping elk in southwest Washington since the 1990s, but since 2008, reports of elk with hoof disease have spread to 10 counties involving both the St. Helens and Willapa Hills elk herds. So at this point, hunter-killed hoof collections are underway in regions 5 and 6 for determination of disease prevalence and diagnostic purposes. WDF staff met last month with the WSU lead researcher, Dr. Margaret Wild, to discuss cooperation on hoof disease. Dr. Wild started in September. She's based in Pullman. Work continues on the survival study, which is entering year 4, designed to learn about the effects of the disease on the elk population. Currently, 56 elk are collared in Region 5 for this study, and the next round of captures for that survival study is scheduled for late December. Cougars are another hot topic in the region right now. In recent months, our Region 5 conflict specialists and enforcement have been responding to multiple reports of cougar sightings and negative interactions in several communities. In some cases, upon investigation, the reports turn out not to have actually been cougars. Where cougar depredation on livestock has occurred, staff provide education on animal husbandry practices to prevent future wildlife conflicts. And when appropriate, we will bring in a houndsman to aid in tracking a cougar for removal. A community meeting was held recently in Stevenson to provide outreach and education about living with cougars. The meeting was very well attended, and as a result, staff received a request to hold a similar meeting in the La Center area, so we're working on making that happen as well. With the North Bend and Mount Hood fatalities this year, we understand that people are concerned. These reports spread quickly on social media, often without anyone actually reporting a cougar sighting or interaction to us. We hear about something that's been posted on social media. But our district bios and our conflict specialists and enforcement team are doing stellar response and outreach work on this. Our habitat program has 6 habitat biologists, one for each county, working on HPAs, hydraulic project approvals, forest practices, growth management planning, and salmon habitat restoration. The program functions have a regulatory aspect where staff assess HPAs by local governments and private citizens and issue permits to authorize those projects in rivers and streams. The program also provides technical assistance to local governments regarding land use issues and permitting, provides input in development of forest management plans, technical representation on the Lower Columbia Recovery Board, and leads a federally funded project that evaluates and implements acquisition and restoration of fish habitat in the Columbia River estuary. The habitat program is currently involved in several cross-program issues, including Columbia River estuary habitat restoration, forest management, wind power projects, and the Army Corps of Engineers sediment retention dam modification on Mount St. Helens. And that's kind of the hot topic that I want to say a few words about, is that sediment retention structure. So following the 1980 eruption of Mount St. Helens, the Corps constructed a sediment retention structure, or SRS, to keep the large volcanic ash sediment load in the Toutle River from settling downstream in the Cowlitz River and filling the Columbia River shipping channel. So the main focus of the SRS is to prevent flooding of downstream communities. To mitigate for fish and wildlife impacts of the SRS, the Corps constructed a trap facility in 1985 to collect adult salmon and steelhead and pass them to spawning habitat upstream of the SRS. The Corps also purchased about 4,000 acres upstream of the SRS and turned the trap facility and land over to WDFW to manage for fish passage and wildlife habitat. The SRS was expected to keep the volcanic sediment upriver for 50 years. However, after 10 years, the reservoir began to fill and sediment began passing downstream. The court implemented a NEPA process to move forward with extending the SRS higher to enable more sediment to be captured and maintained upstream. The Corps was issued a biological opinion by NOAA Fisheries in 2017 for this action, and they anticipate two future raises of the structure totaling just over 20 feet. So working closely with staff from the governor's office, our partnership with the Corps on the Toutle River Fish Collection Facility includes a capital request to upgrade the fish collection facility and acquire additional property next to our Toutle Mudflow Wildlife Area to benefit our Mount St. Helens elk. The cost share comparison on our capital request is $123 million of Corps cost to $25 million cost to the state. This 83% to 17% cost share represents a lot of great work done to reach a mutually beneficial solution to a situation resulting from the Mount St. Helens eruption, which created challenges to public safety, navigation, and fish and wildlife that could not have been foreseen prior to that event. And in closing, I'll say a couple words about enforcement. Our Region 5 enforcement program includes three detachments with 16 total staff. There's an overlap of duties between terrestrial and marine operations shared amongst the three detachments. Marine operations emphasize enforcement of commercial and sport fishing regulations in the 140 miles of the Columbia River downstream of Bonneville Dam and Treaty Indian commercial and subsistence fishing regulations from Bonneville Dam upstream to McNary. The terrestrial operations focus on enforcing hunting regulations, hydraulic permit requirements, tributary fishing regulations, and patrolling wildlife areas and access sites. Significant time is spent enforcing tributary fishing regulations, illegal trafficking of fish and wildlife, responding to dangerous wildlife, such as cougar and bear situations, and assisting the wildlife program with wildlife damage when requested. The enforcement program coordinates with state and local law enforcement agencies to enforce fish and wildlife regulations in the various jurisdictions, as well as general authority policing, public safety and emergency response, and search and rescue. And I just want to say a quick word about our customer service operations. I don't want to leave them out. They handle a large volume of customers that are focused on Columbia Basin fisheries, elk and waterfowl hunting, as well as nuisance and dangerous wildlife issues. They do a great job answering all manner of questions and keeping the trains running on time in our office, and we really appreciate them. With that, I'll just say I'm happy to be here, happy to have you all here in Region 5. I look forward to future conversations and to working with all of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Do you have any extra time?
Do I have any extra time? No, I didn't hear the beeper. I didn't get beeped.
So. Yeah, the third point on page two, please.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to call an audible for my staff if you have actual questions.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So I'll just add a couple of things on the kind of the statewide level. Then thank you. Thank you, Cassina. Great to have her on board. Update on southern resident killer whale. You heard about this yesterday. This just a reminder that there is a meeting on Tuesday. It'll be the final meeting of the task force so that they can finalize their recommendations to the governor's office by the middle of November. After that, the governor has agreed to do a government-to-government consultation with tribes on the recommendations before he decides what he'll put in his budget. So we're working hard to make sure we get our last-ditch efforts in getting the right words in those recommendations the best we can for the task force. You have a director's report in your package. I'll highlight a couple of things. The Macaw trip, we took up a bunch of folks, made a pretty huge investment in going up to Macaw. It's about as far as you can go on the west side from our headquarters office. And I think it's a remarkably good investment on time. I think it meant a lot to those folks to show up. You have to want to get there, as they put it. And so to bring our senior staff up there meant a lot to them, and I think really does set the road for a better relationship going forward. We're doing that same type of effort with other tribes. We've met with Tulalips. We went over to the Nez Perce in Idaho. The Point No Point Treaty Tribes, Northwest Indian Fish Commission, and Jim Woods, our tribal liaison, is setting up similar meetings with any and all tribes that'll have us so that we can foster that relationship. Now, flipping over 180 degrees, I just want to give you a highlight as well. We had a lawsuit filed this week by two members of the Tulalip tribes against the agency and our staff. We had taken some enforcement action against those members. It was dismissed by Pierce County prosecutor, and the case was filed, and the reason I'm bringing it up, Allison Moreau did a King 5 story on it, so you may be hearing about it. I can't really speak about it any further or deeper than that because we just found out about it, and we're assembling our case and understanding what's really going on. We have reached out to the Tulalip tribe directly. I'll note that this is a suit filed by members of the tribe, not the tribe. We've worked closely with the tribe. We've reached out to them since the lawsuit was filed, as well as Northwest Indian Fish Commission, to make sure we maintain those relationships. We're working so hard to build. I don't want this unfortunate incident to undermine that, and we're confident it won't in the long term. And then I have to give the update on the wolves, kind of a mandatory subject, I think, since I've been here. On the old profanity territory, I have issued a lethal removal order since we last got together. That was towards the end of the month, last month. That order has not been carried out to date. We made a couple attempts and haven't been successful on that yet. That was a result of their 16th depredation, known depredation for that pack confirmed. The Togo pack, which is a pack that we'd taken previous removal on, a couple of animals, has also continued with depredations. We've worked really closely with this producer. He's really been collaborative, including additional non-lethal preventatives. We're working with him now to get some fencing up in around pastures so that he can do a better job of keeping his animals tight. But there has been an additional depredation despite that effort. So we are, I'm expecting a recommendation from staff probably today on next steps. So I do not have a path forward yet, but we're going to have to decide whether this reinstitutes the need to go further with our lethal removal in that pack. We were previously in an evaluation period after the last depredations. And unfortunately, we had to add a pack to the group. Now the Smackout pack, we've had a fourth depredation in that pack as well since August. And so that puts us well above the threshold for lethal removal consideration again. And I'm expecting our staff, frankly, are getting worn out over there. They're working long hours doing investigations, writing reports, giving me recommendations, working with the producers to include additional non-lethal preventatives. So I'm expecting that recommendation early next week, hopefully Monday, on what to do with that pack. So we have three packs now for the first time that are all above the threshold at one time. And we've reported it before, but just not to leave Commissioner Holzmiller out, we've also, the Grouse Flats has had two depredations, but hopefully that'll be the end of that. Since I keep being told we're at the end of the grazing season, I'll believe it when I see it, or the depredation season certainly. So we're hopeful that pack will continue to behave in a manner that we can just leave them alone. We have worked closely. Sean Cantrell mentioned weekly calls. We're trying to figure out. We have committed that, particularly in old profanity territory, that's the third year in a row, we need to figure out what to do different there next year. And we're committed to doing something different. We don't want to just keep removing wolves based on the same non-effective, non-lethal. So we have committed to work with folks to figure out what's that look like for next year. What can we do to make that a different process and hopefully a different outcome? And given time, I think those are the highlights. Otherwise, there are additional topics within your director's report.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Thornburg.
Thank you, Director, and welcome, Christina.
It's a great report. I have a question about the resources directed toward the killer whale task force. We've actually contributed quite a bit. It's kind of stretched things staff-wise. I'm just wondering, will that be continuing? What are we looking at in the future?
Well, the task force will wrap up their work with recommendations to the governor for year one recommendations. There will be some additional work for year two in October of next year. So that work, in theory, declines. But the recommendations are going to have a lot of recommendations that affect our agency directly, at which point we're hopeful they'll be in the governor's budget, and we'll be working hard to get those approved and funded. So the work will shift more than go away, is how I describe it.
Okay.
Yes, Commissioner Garza.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Comment on the task force matter, and then one other matter later in the director's report on the HSRG review. So on the Southern Resident Task Force recommendations, the draft recommendations as they are at this time, as you've indicated that you'll be working hard for the wording to be as good as possible. I recall yesterday it was noted that there was a unanimous vote for from this commission to recommend a high level, approximately 50 million smolts, to be released for prey purposes primarily, 30 million in the Puget Sound area and 20 million in the Columbia River. While it was a little disappointing that the first round of recommendations that came out on the September 24th did not air out that recommendation, there was further discussion about it, I guess, at the next meeting, and as it stands now, the October 24th report still does not point out or give detail on the commission's recommendation. And I know that there's such a quick turnaround there that it's a difficult thing for the folks to do, but I think it's important the commission representative on the task force, our chairman, and the director and his representatives do try to display the will of the commission on this to go big on this test of prey availability for killer whales. Right now, when you need to read the recommendations, it's not clear if there's a recommendation to go small or big. It says increased hatchery production. It doesn't say approximately 50 million. It doesn't say 1 million. There's some reference to the 2019 levels, but nothing beyond that. And there's some reference to $4.5 million. The 2019 level is small compared to approximately $50 million, and the $4.5 million is obviously small as well. So I think it's good for this proposal in terms of it making as far as it can in the task force process and being aired out fully there, and that we try the best we can so that all 45 members of the task force have a chance to hear this recommendation to do something substantial and significant. And if words like substantial and significant can get in there, I think that would be a success at a minimum. If it's possible to get things like approximately 50 million, approximately 30 million, approximately 20 million on the Columbia River, and language in there that talks about the wild fish protection business a little stronger than it does now, I think that that would be a worthy goal to shoot for. On the matter of the pinnipeds section of the task force recommendation, yesterday we heard some very good things from Mr. Pamplin about the science in Puget Sound in particular that describes how severe the problem is. He mentioned the recent studies about correlations between pinniped abundance and the decline of wild salmon populations. He mentioned a high mortality rate for juvenile salmon by harbor seals, and there's some science cited in the report, but it doesn't seem to get to that recent science that makes the stronger point that there is a significant problem with pinnipeds in Puget Sound. So I'd also urge, consistent with the will of the commission here, that to whatever degree the staff can get as much information, scientific information in the pinniped section to make that comparable to the will of the council or the commission, that would be a good thing. On the matter of the HSRG review, on page 6 and 7 of the director's report here, first of all, let me say thank you for the update there. There's been some questions about where is the review at. Has there been some thinking about it? Has there been some planning about that? And so you've indicated that staff is moving forward on this. We have received some public testimony in writing and some informal public testimony about who would be on, who would be helping on this review, whether this would just be an internal staff review. We've had this call for a completely independent staff review of perhaps some components of it. I don't think it's appropriate to have an independent review of some of the obsolete details, like the comparisons to the Century 21 references and this and that. But obviously, the three HSRG directives that were suspended while the review is going on is something that it would be beneficial as we move through the process for no one to be able to claim that there's any bias involved in the review. So perhaps as we move through the course of the winter, if we could get another update on what the game plan is for that and the schedule, that would be information we'd be very interested in hearing about.
So, Commissioner, thank you. I'll respond to each of those, or attempt to at least. On the southern resident killer whale, part of the challenge there is, as you well know, is that it's a group of 45 very intentionally diverse individuals representing diverse interests, and there's two elements going on there. One is the art of compromise, and the other is just not holding the pen and who does. So we're working hard to do exactly what you suggested. I will note that we did submit exactly the language that came from the commission. I was at the last task force meeting. Amy Windrop is our representative at the table. We specifically made sure the group heard again the numbers for production and also the pin and pet arguments. And we have not successfully got that in the document yet. That said, we've continued to work with them. I think we will get at least the increased emphasis towards significant. We're looking at go big or go home idea, as we've described it. We're also looking at potentially, and I don't want to jinx it, but if we don't get, since there's maybe some question of what that means, could we get a footnote or an addendum that actually just says, here's exactly what came from the Fish Agency, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and get the actual motion language somewhere in the document. So we're working all those angles and hope to do those. Yes, sir.
And just in response, well, thank you for that effort. That's all good news. To the extent it's not showing up yet, as you go through the process on the next meeting, perhaps for anyone in the group who might be objecting to it, or anybody in the group who is saying they're not in support of it, those folks be fully informed about the particulars of it and to pursue whatever their concerns on to make sure they understand the basis of the proposal. When I've asked about who is actually opposed to this, perhaps there's some tribal sovereignty reasons that aren't associated with the level. So I'm just saying perhaps if you hear anyone who's objecting to this, that you make sure they understand the full nature of the proposal.
Director, if I could just take a stab at that, but my recollection, again, with the number of people there, you can appreciate it's and controlling the pen is always part of it. But what I recall more than objecting to the concept is objecting to a specific number that seemed to surface more. Like they didn't want to. And I can't remember who they were specifically or that, but they didn't want to be tied to a 50 million figure. So it was like more, but not don't write it.
And our motion said approximately 50 million, but it is a round number. But whoever objected to that, it'd be interesting to know who they were and if you could understand why they're objecting to that and explain why approximately 50 million is chosen as opposed to approximately 1 million.
Yeah, and again, they didn't focus on the word approximate. They focused on the figure.
We do know who those folks were, and we will definitely follow up. I believe we've had discussions, but just to be absolutely certain, we can follow up with those individuals to make sure of that. And I think Chair is right. They weren't opposed to even going big. It was just they didn't want numbers, specific numbers. And the last thing on the HSRG.
Wait, just one more, because I think one of their thoughts was, what if it's 60?
And on HSRG, we're getting moving on that, and I think we could easily come back with a date at the next commission meeting with an actual plan of the review.
Other comments on the directors? Yes, Mr. Holzmiller.
I guess as much as thank you for having the new director, regional director, come and make that presentation. It was very helpful for me because I've been on here long enough. You should be getting some of this stuff figured out, but I'm a little slow on the uptake. But it was very helpful for me to see your geographic area and all the different issues, and it spoke very well for her to be here that short a period of time and to at least assemble a report like that, let alone able to get a grip of all the things that are transpiring in this. So thank you both. That was very, very good at report.
Any other?
That's it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Director. And again, welcome.